Hello.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. Good
Hi.
evening. Mic's on, so let's wait. Oh, we still got a few minutes. So how's everybody doing? Pretty
Fine.
good. Good.
Looking forward to a warm day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It might be the last one till January, I mean, or February or something,
Yeah, June,
or
yeah.
March.
Yeah.
So, better get out and do something with it.
Vote.
My favorite time of year, fall. How you doing, Pat?
Fine, thanks. How are you? Get out and
Doing
vote if you
well.
haven't.
Yeah.
There you go.
Great day to vote. Hey, Joel.
Hey.
Good to see
Hi,
you.
Lynn.
Hi, I do not see that the meeting is recording, so I need to.
Lynn, it says show's recording on.
Yeah,
Yeah, it says recording.
you all see
Your
it?
show's up.
Okay,
Yeah.
there
Yeah.
it is. Okay, great. Thank you.
Hey, Jane is here. I am driving, so there is no video. Sorry.
So
Yeah, you be
Jane,
careful.
so you can't raise your hand, so you right, I think you just have to say, "Hey, it's Jane. I want to say something." Right,
Okay.
Joe? That's
Please don't
Sounds
raise your
good.
hand.
That's the
Yeah.
telephone voice raising your hand.
There's Stephanie. We're getting the band back together.
That's right.
So, Joe,
Yes.
how about let me know when you want me to put the agenda or the board packet up on the screen.
Okay.
I have it easily available. I also have the sheet to show the motions that people are voting on. That's something we'll put that up on the screen so that it's clear to the public
Okay.
during the meeting and also on the recording. But then when y'all are doing the roll call, I'll put it back to your faces because I've learned that's what the public needs to see is the
Yeah.
people voting. Okay.
This is all we're, it's still part of the learning curve that's keeps curving.
Yeah.
So, do we want to start exactly in time, or do you want to wait a couple more minutes?
We
Who are we missing?
don't have a quorum, do we?
No, I don't think so. We have
No.
Jane, Elaine, myself.
Tom Moore is here and Julian is joining. And I think Kathleen was trying to join. I can't tell if she made it in.
Hope she makes it in. We kind of miss her.
Yeah, she was trying to. So
So can she do it on her phone like Jane?
you know, that might be what she was doing. So
Okay.
sometimes the connections are just not stable, but it does look like you have a quorum now. So if you want to start, I could, maybe I should share. Oh, here she's going to try again. I just for the record, I need to say that I am right outside the Lyle Shields room. I can't get in because it's locked, but this is the regular meeting place. If a member of the public shows up to participate in the meeting, I can let them in the door, which I can see, and they can sit here and listen and look on the computer. So that's...
And you guys will be well masked and everything.
That's right. We've got this covered.
Okay. Oh, Kyle is just joined us with his Obama picture. Hey, Kathleen, long time no see. Okay, I think we have a quorum, so let's call to order. So, roll call, please.
Susan Fowler. Tom Moore.
Here.
Elaine Palencia.
Here.
Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport.
Here.
Jane Sprandel.
Here.
Kathleen Worth Couch.
Here.
John Paul Joachim. Joe Omo Osage.
Here. Okay. So we're here. Let's do we have any citizen input today? Wait. I'm sure there's something going on in town somewhere. Okay. If there is nothing to add for the citizen input, let's go ahead and approve the agenda for today.
I'll move to approve the agenda.
Okay.
All in favor? Or do we have to, roll call?
Yeah, we'll have to do a roll call.
Okay.
Tom Moore?
Do you have any discussion? Oh, okay.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Kathleen Worth Couch?
Yes.
Joe Omo Osage?
Yes. So, approved. So, to start out with, just a quick touch and base with everybody. I'm glad to see everybody. I know we're still missing a couple of people, but I'm glad to see you. And this has been this year, this last few months has felt like the last 5 years. So it feels difficult. But I know at Parkland, we've seen more students who are coming in with more mental health issues, and we're trying to do our best to make sure that our students can get through the semester. And I know within the larger community, we're seeing some different things happening. I hope as a board, we continue to provide this, the funds and the services and the guidance to the community organizations and foundations to keep this running. And so hopefully the stress of COVID and the stress of this election season doesn't spill over into anything worse. But I hope we make it work out well for everybody. There's a quick thing that I know in the community there was a homeless man passed away a few months ago, and there was some funds being raised for him. And so there are some questions about how the funds were being used. And I always wondered, when homeless people pass away and they have families in town, how do we make sure that their funeral arrangements are met and things like that? Is there something that we can do as a community? Is this something the community is interested in in doing so people don't have to do to GoFundMe to bury their loved ones. It's something else that's been on my mind over the last few weeks. But that's all I have for comments today. Executive Director, do you have anything to add?
Just three things. There are, you will see a little bit in the staff reports about these things. Scylla, there's lots of, we're doing a lot of discussion behind the scenes, trying to prepare for an RFP. I did a draft of an RFP and then had to stop. So there are some real issues there. I think one of the most important things we're running into is that the reality of the rates, you know, the state rates for this type of service are low all over the state. That's really well known. The state is in trouble with a federal court for that for 3 years in a row. But it also looks like a really important fact is that for this market, the rates are particularly low, like really not set well, and that we should probably be doing some advocacy with the state to get an increase in rates just for Champaign County, because some of the organizations who are quite successful at providing Scylla services in the nearby counties say they can't do it here. They cannot afford to hire staff here. So I think this is something we'll look into, but that is just one of many, many, many thorny issues behind the scenes with the Scylla. So later tonight, there's some business that we can accomplish. So it'll feel really nice to do the things that we can control and move forward with this project. So that's one. The other is the expo. A great deal of energy is going into these, tiny expos. Kim Bowdry is doing almost all of that. She's got the expo coordinators working with her. She's also got support from a web developer that we work with. And they're just learning so much about the virtual meeting and event world. It's amazing. And we're trying to make sure that this, as an event and then as a document, is as accessible as possible. So that, we're also learning about that. So we don't have a full report on it, but I just want y'all to know that that's been a major part of our work in the last month. And then the other thing is that we are about 1 week away from the first round of really important agency reports. We have first quarter reports for all of the funded programs for this year. Those will be coming in the end of next week. And then the audits and financial reviews and compilations are also due in 1 week. So these are really important, and we read all of them and we process them in different ways. We do a lot with them. And I just wanted to, this is probably not the right audience, but I need to remind the agencies about those reports, and hopefully we'll learn more about adjustments related to COVID and performance so far this year. Anyway, that's the big stuff. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so let's move on to new business. I like looking at this quite well. I mean, the One Door Crisis Response presentation, it's a PowerPoint. And so are we going to have a presentation, or are we just going to discuss? Okay. So Joel, are you presenting, or is just Joey who is presenting?
So I'll start presenting, and then Joey's going to address some updates as I get through this.
Okay.
Hi, Joey. Real quick before I get going, I'm taking this call from home, and so I've got a 10-month-old German Shepherd puppy that may jump on my lap halfway through here, so I apologize if...
That is okay. It makes you much more human.
So if you hear me yelling, stop, it's not at any of you. It's at the dog.
Okay.
Well, am I able to... Well, let me... Before I share a screen. So I'm going to go through some... I know a lot of places on here, and several of you have seen this presentation. Some of you haven't. I'm going to go fairly quickly through it. And so that we have time at the end for questions, and Joey's mm-hmm. going to give some updates as we get through the end of it. So let me see if I can get my screen shared here. There we go. We'll go to from the start. So what we're going to talk about is a concept that's in several different iterations throughout the last several years here in Champaign County. And we finally landed on calling it a one door. The history behind that is, as we talked and looked at how other places do it, what we're talking about, and this isn't unique to Champaign County. There was, I think it's Tucson refers to it as no wrong door. And one of the original helpers, planners with this, it just sounds negative, no wrong door. And so we came up with one door. And so all this is going to be facilitated through one door. And this will be a door that's open, not just to law enforcement, which was the how this concept got started was how to benefit law enforcement. But it'll be a door that is open to the entire county, regardless of where you live within this county. And in reality, if you drive into this county from somewhere else, that door will still be open to you. But I want to stress as we go through this, that's one question that always comes up. And while it's created and designed with law enforcement in mind, it is a door that is accessible to everybody. But going back to why we started this, as you look at law enforcement and how we respond and interact with individuals who are in a mental health crisis or really any kind of crisis, and I stress that because we teach our officers not to diagnose. We train our officers to respond to a behavior and not to diagnose what is causing that behavior or to come to a conclusion. So the individual that the officer's engaging with could be experiencing a medical issue, or could be experiencing an issue where the substance abuse is causing that behavior, or mental health, or a combination of all of those. And so as we look at historically how officers deal with individuals who are in crisis, we really typically only have one of three choices, and that is take somebody to jail, take somebody to the hospital, or leave the person in the condition in which we found them. And when you look at our stats, that is one of the highest things that we do is simply resolve at the scene. And that doesn't solve any solutions. And we'll get in a little bit more what that looks like. But as you look at the stats there, and I'm not going to read them to you, but you can see that law enforcement is in need of a solution to this very dynamic problem. And as you look at our response here within Champaign County, there's a lot of things that can be done for the individual who's has already been stabilized, the individual who's ready for treatment, the individual who's ready for some form of solution. There's several agencies, and they're all siloed. They're we can talk to each other, but we don't have means or effective methods of crossing those lines in a real-time solution. So I can call, we've got a great relationship with Rosecrans and Rosecrans's crisis team, but getting real-time information to them and back and forth is difficult at best. Also, who we're talking about is, if you've heard me refer to, and I've stolen this from See You at Home, is the vulnerability V. And there's five different individuals on that V. And if you picture the V at the top, is somebody who is stable. They may start slipping down towards the point of the V, but they're stable. They've either have a mental health issue or they've stabilized that. There's individuals who are at risk, and there's the individuals who any day now, just the smallest thing can set them over the edge. But these individuals, as I just mentioned, have great resources within Champaign County. Who we're looking at are the individuals who are sliding down that V, or the individuals who've landed at the bottom of that V. And these are the individuals who are in the moment are in crisis. And these are the individuals that we deal with at 3 o'clock in the morning or Sunday afternoon, when most resources are closed or aren't available to law enforcement. And so as I go through this presentation, this is who One Door is really directed at, is at the individual who's in the moment, in crisis, and there's not currently a solution for that individual within Champaign County. As you look at what law enforcement is dealing with here within the county, these are our numbers, and I will state that they are underreported. So how we come up with these numbers is a police officer will deal with Johnny in the morning at Schnucks, and Johnny's in crisis. And so the police officer will fill out what we call a CIT form at the conclusion of that contact. Say Johnny's dealt with in the afternoon at Lincoln Square Mall. Well, that should be a second contact. I should get a second CIT form. And then in the afternoon, Johnny's dealt with again at the library. So that's three contacts. We will only probably get one form from that day. Or Johnny's somebody that we deal with on a regular basis. So we may not even get a form from the officer because we're dealing with Johnny on such a regular basis. The officer doesn't take time to fill out that form. So the numbers as you look at are accurate as what's been reported, but I tend to say they're about probably a third to a half of what we're really looking at within Champaign County. The one number that is fairly accurate would be the petitions. That's the involuntary petitions. And those are fairly accurate only because an officer has to fill out a police report anytime they take somebody to the hospital against that individual's will. So what our mission will be with the One Door, and let me minimize this so I can see this better, is it's going to be an open single door solution offering opportunity to be recognized, evaluated, stabilized, engaged, and treated with dignity and respect. The individuals that are coming through this door, as I mentioned, are the, a lot of times we'll deal with somebody who's simply criminal trespass. They're at the local coffee shop. They're in a state of crisis. They're a friend without an address, and they're in crisis, and they need to be stabilized. Well, they're not a candidate for the hospital. They may be technically committing a crime of criminal trespass, but they're not really, that's not going to be a good solution to take them to jail, simply to get them away from the coffee shop. But what else do you do with this person? How do you get this person somewhere that is safe for that person and safe for the community? And so One Door is going to solve that and be partner with that. Another person that the police deal with, is we had a young lady who was in one of our medical facilities, had been inpatient, treated for a medical issue, and that medical issue was stabilized, and the young lady didn't need to be in the hospital anymore. However, she was in a state of psychosis, and she had nowhere else to go. And so she was refusing to leave that hospital room until her husband came to get her, and she lived 2.5 hours away. The problem wasn't the distance she lived. The problem was she doesn't have a husband. And her state of psychosis, that was one of her hallucinations, was that she had a husband, and she's waiting on that individual to get there. And she's refusing to leave her room until he shows up. Well, what do you do with this individual? The hospital room isn't an appropriate place for her. Again, it goes back to technically it's criminal trespass to property. But there's not a person in this world that would want to take this person to jail. But what do you do? And so One Door would be a solution for someplace for that young lady to go. Let me get this to work some more. It's going to provide members of community. Again, this is going to be a community accessible facility. And so the goal would be right now, if my loved one is in a state of crisis and I don't know what to do, I call the police. I call 911 and law enforcement sent. What we want to do is get it so that if my loved one's in crisis, I'll know where to take my loved one, and it'll be a facility I can take my loved one to. It's also going to enhance and not replace current and existing structures that are out there. We're not looking to replace other programs that exist. And it's going to strengthen the collaboration we currently have in Champaign County as I go throughout the state and teach mental health response to other law enforcement officers or talk about what we're doing here in Champaign County. We're well ahead of the curve in Champaign County. We're doing a lot of creative and inventive things, but we need to continue to strengthen that collaboration. Our goals would be diversion. We want to, when you see all the stats, if you go back as I flew through them, our arrest of individuals in crisis tend to hang around between 5% and 8% of our total arrests, but we need to get that number down. We also need a place to take somebody rather than the emergency room. We don't keep the stat on it. It'd be difficult to achieve, although if somebody had hours upon hours of time to just sit and look through records, we could get it. But probably of the 700 and some odd people we take on a petition to a hospital during the year, probably 95 to 98% of those individuals, if we had a different solution, probably we could divert away from that emergency department. So it's going to give us options as well, something to do other than just leave an individual in the condition we find them. It's going to provide us case management and follow-up. I can tell you that about 15% of my total calls for service in the city of Urbana involve somebody that we define as a super utilizer. But I have difficulty being able to, in a timely fashion, move that individual's information over to somebody at Rosecrans who can do the appropriate follow-up. This is going to be real-time follow-up, real-time case management. It's also going to provide some education back and forth. Law enforcement is going to be able to spend more time with crisis workers and just learn from how they do things. And crisis workers are going to understand a little bit more about what it is we're dealing with and how they can best support the police. And we're going to support each other. And there's going to be some advocacy role in this. Some people, we need to speak up for those individuals who currently don't have a voice here within Champaign County. What's on the other side of the door? One of the primary things, and Joey's going to talk a little bit more about this when I finally get quiet and give him a chance, but there's going to be a crisis response team. So we're going to have a team that can respond to the scene for the officer. And so the officer provides the law enforcement security end of it and a crisis worker who can do the assessment right there on scene and make better, more appropriate choices and decisions. That crisis worker will get there one of two ways. One is the when it comes into the dispatch center, a very obvious mental health call, the police and the crisis worker will get dispatched at the same time. One of the goals of the program would be to identify what scenarios the crisis worker could become a first responder and work towards getting the crisis worker towards that. That's down the line a little bit. When you look at some of the programs throughout the nation, they have created a program where a crisis worker can become that first responder, but you've got to work through the system and understand more of what we're looking at here within Champaign County and get everybody comfortable with that before we just say go and start at that level. So we will get there. The other way is the officer gets on scene and identifies that the call does involve some form of mental health issue or crisis issue, and the officer will be able to call for that crisis worker to respond. We're asking that that crisis worker get onto that scene within 30 minutes. The crisis team will respond throughout the entire Champaign County, and so getting them from one call to the other may take some time, but we need them there. Typically right now, if I call any of the other social agencies, whether it's through DCFS or through another agency, I'm looking at a 2 or 3 hour response time to get somebody onto my scene. And law enforcement doesn't have that kind of time to wait for somebody to get there. Another thing we're going to have is a living room model somewhere where we can take as I referred to the young lady who was in crisis at the hospital, somewhere we can get that young lady to get stabilized and then be able to identify what's the best solution both in the moment, short-term and long-term for that individual and get that individual connected to those resources. Crisis respite will be part of this. I didn't mention, I'll follow up here in a second, this entire process, the one door, will operate out of 70 East Washington, which is the old Time Center, the current location for See You at Home. Crisis Respite, at least the near future, is planning on staying right where it's at, which is part of 70 East Washington. We'll also introduce more wraparound services that will be supported both through Rosecrans and See You at Home. The individuals will be able to get introduced right there, and we won't have to move them to another location to get them introduced into those services. And finally, when we started this conversation back in 2012, we didn't have any shelters at all. We now have the men's and women's shelter, and those will be pivotal in this process of being able to get individuals into those as we go. What is the cost? These are very rough costs. We're looking at, I'm going to just skip to the end here for the sake of time, but we're looking at somewhere around 2.2, probably realistically $2.5 million a year once this is up and running to provide the services and provide all the staffing and adequately move this process forward. Questions I always get, where's it going to be located? Again, at 70 East Washington. Will the facility be open 24/7? Yes. The hope is when we open the door on day one, it will be open 24/7, 365. Again, it's going to be for the general public, not just for law enforcement. The See You at Home will continue to provide the services that currently provides and enhance those at some level. The one door is the best way of referring to where this is located, but it's going to be multiple different services combined inside that one door so that law enforcement or the community doesn't have to think about where do I take my loved one. It's the best way of thinking about this is it's either emergency room or convenient care for individuals in crisis. Will the crisis team respond countywide when one door opens? The goal will be for it to, the crisis team to respond countywide. There will be a short pilot conducted just within the city of Urbana with that crisis team to figure out what's the best role, what's the best way, what did we think of, what did we miss, and to get it tuned a little bit more before we try to go with the multiple different policing agencies within Champaign County. But eventually, yes, it will be opened. The crisis team will respond countywide. And will it be a secure facility? That's still a conversation that's going on amongst the partners, which are Carl, Rosecrans, and See You at Home, and what exactly that's going to look like when it comes to involuntary petitions. It's still part of a more in-depth discussion, which will lead us into why Joey is here. And let me get rid of this show and bring everybody just back up here so I can see everybody. What we've gotten to, and I'll give this over to Joey, is we're shooting for an early first quarter of 2021 to get this open. Up to this point, there's been a handful of us who have just been pushing this, and we're at a point now where to get this over the finish line and to get a lot of the questions answered and to get it more formalized and to get it more effective is we're looking at hiring somebody full-time to essentially be a director of this. And Joey, I will give you the table there, and then when you're done, we can go to questions.
All right, thank you, Joel, for all that work on the presentation. It was excellent. Just some kind of background how Rosecrans got involved with the project. Our initial responsibility was to be the crisis co-response team. As Joel mentioned, that we do that now. We'll do that for Champaign, Urbana, the county. But as Joel mentioned, the issue is the response time. The response time can't be instantly, which is what the model and the goal is, to get through an instant response with law enforcement to try to divert crisis, committing up to anything from a unnecessary ER visits or jail. So that's how we kind of got involved, and we do have a model of care for that currently. And I think overall it's going well and it's meeting the need, but it could be better. Later on, as we were meeting, as we talked about challenges with this, it was, you know, a dedicated person in order to go through some of the most difficult questions about this model. Those things would be policies in place. You know, we have to have policies in the way we're going to handle business with doing this. What verbal de-escalation model are we going to pick? Who's going to be the trainer for that? Tons of issues with HIPAA, issues with involuntary admissions, issues with direct admissions to hospitals. I mean, all those things are questions kind of up in the air. If the crisis does turn into this gray area, what can this group do in order to make this a smoother and quicker transition with less harm to the consumer of getting the services? What's best and quick and resolved? So during that time, it was decided that Rosecrans did accept as part of this project to assume those responsibilities and employ a staff, kind of what we call a project manager. We haven't hired the staff yet. I'm still working on the job description and salaries and things like that. The title that we've given it is Coordinator of Crisis Co-Response. And what that coordinator would do initially is this project is up and going is facilitate and coordinate all the supportive components of the crisis co-response model, work with other community partners about, and I kind of termed it in a way the best way to serve the client. I'm not sure we have all the answers now, but it's the best way. How do we handle domestics? How do we handle addiction? How do we handle detox? All the components of things that could be happening. So it'll be a huge effort at first with the community providers, and also look for funding for this, other ways to fund this project and get all the services in place. We're looking for somebody with a master's degree, licensed as well, licensed clinical social worker, licensed clinical professional counselor, hopefully with some management experience too. Down the road, this crisis co-response coordinator would have two team leads under them, and then a team of a staff, anywhere from bachelor's degrees to master's degrees, but the frontline staff would be very focused on verbal de-escalation and resolving crisis. Also, I think a big component of this is crisis co-response is great and crisis is wonderful, but being in the field for so many years, the most important thing about it is what happens next. After the crisis is over, who's following up? Is it instant? Is it the next day, the next few hours? So we're trying to build a system where follow-up is in place, not only when the crisis is done and everybody leaves, that this crisis co-response model will have things in place for a 4, 8, or 12-hour follow-up, and then hopefully for two to three days until linkage occurs to the appropriate services. That is my presentation on this job description and what we're after on our next step as moving this project forward.
So one of the things that I think is important to add before I open this up to questions is when it comes to that director, the city of Urbana, this is not, I want to stress this, as a lieutenant here with the city of Urbana, this is not an Urbana project. This is a countywide project. That said, the city of Urbana, our council, when we approved a budget for the entire city, elected to reduce the police department budget, patrol budget by 2%, which was a little over $100,000. The mayor has since agreed to, and the reason for that was to take that money and find ways of supporting the police that were non-law enforcement, to take some money and put it into services so that law enforcement doesn't have to respond to different things. and one Doors is the initial service the city's looking at supporting. And so the mayor has taken 75,000 of that 100,000 plus and is going to give it to Rosecrans once they get the person identified who they're going to hire and help support that hire, so that Rosecrans hadn't budgeted for this position. And so we need to make sure that they can bring in a quality person. And so that money is going to go towards that. So I want to make sure that it's understood that some of this money is still going to be needed, but that the city of Urbana is making an investment into One Door. And now I will open it up for questions. We either covered it so well that there are no questions, or I covered it so poorly nobody knows what to ask.
I have a question.
Yes,
go ahead.
I noticed that you've got two hospitals, OSF and Carl, listed as co-sponsors. How do they fit into this plan, and are they involved in the financing, or what exactly is their commitment?
Sure. So I'm not sure. I'd have to go back and look at my slides. We'll see where OFS is listed. Currently, Carl is the only, the current partners are Carl, See You at Home, and Rosecrans. OSF has not been approached with this project, and so it's not that they've refused to participate. We've not approached them. We need to get a little more clarity on exactly what we're going to ask them to do before we can approach them to ask. When it comes to Carl, Carl is 100%, I think I can say 110% behind this project. They will have some financial commitment to this. One of the reasons we need to hire the director is to be able to put more in writing and paint a better picture of exactly what we need from Carl. And so once Carl it's understood what we're going to ask them for, they will then tell us what they're going to give. I can't speak for them. I can tell you that they recognize that this will save them a lot of money, and they're willing to participate in that. But at this time, they've not given a dollar amount. But yes, Carl will give some money to the project. Any other questions?
There's a question in the chat. I think also Tom Moore has his hand up.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Tom.
I have a similar question, actually two questions. One is, if Lieutenant Sanders, if this is not strictly an Urbana project, but a county project, is has Champaign done a similar thing as your mayor has done? Have they committed any resources to this? And does the sheriff have a role in the county sheriff? Does he have a role in helping to finance this project?
I have not had a formal conversation with anybody from the city of Champaign. So they've not volunteered any money, but we've not asked them for any money, and we've not given them a presentation. So I don't want anybody to walk away thinking they're not going to participate. I know that my mayor has spoken with the mayor in Champaign. She's aware of the project, but there's not been a formal presentation to their council, and there's not been a formal ask of them for any money. And part of that goes back to the need to be able to get the operational end of this more defined and more presentable, so that we can explain with clarity what we're asking each entity for. I believe that the sheriff will, each police department will have a role in this. And as this has been put together, there's a crisis intervention team, which is the officers who've been trained specifically to deal with somebody in crisis. There's a steering committee that meets every other month. And this is kind of one of the that's come out of that. The off months that the steering committee as a whole is at meeting, all five police departments have a representative at the table. And so this has been shared with all of the command staff at the various police departments. So I can't speak for them, but I would imagine they will all participate at some level as we continue.
So at least they're all aware that this project is in progress.
Yes.
I have one question for Mr. Rosenkranz. You mentioned about follow-up. Can you talk a little more of that? Is it just one follow-up or I don't know what term to use, but the patients get assigned to a case manager. So what is it about the follow-up that we need to know about so we can help not having a reoccurrence of this particular crisis that got us involved in the first place?
Sure. Right now, not only Rosenkranz, but many other mobile crisis teams, what they specialize in is disposition. They do a crisis assessment, they do a disposition, whether that's hospitalization or deflection, and then they move on. I think with the one door as a whole, and with the crisis co-response, we're looking to spend 3 or 4 more hours after disposition to ensure that the reoccurrence does not occur, whether that's brief crisis counseling, linking up with other services in town that are most appropriate. And then the second part of that would be, with the model, we would follow the case, follow the client until we are linked with the appropriate services, whether that's a detox center, residential, domestic violence, whatever would be. So that's the goal, follow that it's going to be longer lasting.
So Tom, did you have a follow-up to that question?
No, those are it.
Okay. There was a question in the chat about the Youth Assessment Center. And right now, there's not a specific plan how to incorporate them. This is primarily focused at adults. As it grows, what I keep referring to is the One Door 2.0. And so as this grows and develops and gets its feet under it, we can start looking at what other resources, what other programming, what other things are out there within the county that we can start communicating and connecting with. There's some resources that exist that can quite literally connect any resource within this county together in real time. Now, like any computer program, it comes at a cost, and you know, identifying who wants to pay that. But as we grow and develop, we will start recognizing how to incorporate more than just the resources that we're currently using.
I have a question. Go
ahead, Elaine.
So the $2.2 million that you mentioned is for the pilot program only?
No. So that is an estimate. Again, if we come back in 6 months or a year with a higher number, don't look at me cross-eyed, that number may go up as we identify what it's going to cost. As Joey starts to identify what it's going to cost to get build a crisis team of individuals who will stay within the crisis team and not just move out, and other programming that we're going to need. So that's a estimate at this point, but that would be what it costs for likely year two and beyond.
And that's new money then. That's not including some money that's already been spent on some of these services. That's new money above what's here now.
So there's some old and some new. So part of that is, part of that 2.2 is CUIT Homes' current operating budget.
Okay.
So they're what they, with the shelter and the Time Center and the program they do that supports this. Hey, I'm sorry, folks. Roxy, I'm
it's sorry. Okay.
With the services they do, their CU at Home's current budget is just south of $1 million, but that's in there as well. So other people have dogs too. So
it's gone to the dogs.
So that's the does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you. Okay.
Dr. Joachim has his hand up as well.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Lieutenant Sanders, for this presentation. I just had a few questions. One was in regards to the cost. Do you have a ballpark estimate of how many staff members you'll need for the initial project?
I do. I don't have that in front of me. Joey, do you?
For kind of projects on the pilot, when we're looking at just having the director going and using our current mobile crisis team, I think two staff in the pilot would be most appropriate. I think what we don't know is how the community feels about the response time question. What does the response time need to be? Because again, we'll respond now, but it could be well after the crisis is over. It's how we look at it. If we want us there in 10 to 15 minutes, then we almost have to look at a crisis worker like a firefighter, right? There could be some days when they're busy and some days they're not, but what do we want? That's where I think the cost is where we want that response time to be.
And so with the $2 million for the first year, where is a lot of the cost going into? Is it a building or? You said with just two staff already, I was just wondering where the money would go into.
Sure. So the budget you see for the first year, some of it's going in the building. So the Time Center is we've actually had an architect volunteer his time to reconfigure and draw up plans for fitting all of this into 70 East Washington, and it can be done for a mere $800,000. So that's part of the when you see the slide and you see the year one cost, and you'll see some fluctuation in that year one where it says $500,000 to $800,000. Part of that is if you look deep and dig deep into the state of Illinois budget, you'll see that there's $800,000, I believe. I've got to remember the exact numbers. There's $300,000 dedicated by the state of Illinois to remodel 70 East Washington. That money hasn't arrived, and being state money, will it arrive, will it not arrive? So if it arrives, we need to find $500,000. If it doesn't arrive, we need to find $800,000. And then there's another $200,000 that goes towards the purchase of the building. So CU at Home has purchased the building from Rosecrans. And I guess I should be fully disclosed here for those who don't know. As I speak about CU at Home and its needs and its roles, I also sit on the board at CU at Home. So I feel like I should make that clear as well. So CU at Home has purchased the building for just south of $900,000. But every dime CU at Home spends on the building is money that CU at Home is not going to spend on programming. So that $800,000 is for remodeling it. And then there's, if somebody wants to help pay off the note, that would be good too. The state has committed $200,000 towards that. Again, will we see that money? I don't know.
And so then the 1.2 recurring cost is like, what would that go into? Is it increasing staff or weather?
Increasing staff for a lot of it. So again, Joey's got to put together a team and what that size of that team, we're not sure what that looks like. CU at Home is going to put on more staffing, and I can't speak without notes directly in front of me. If you, I can try to get that to Lynn, and she can distribute that answer to you. But yes, See at Home is going to put on more staffing within the shelters. Somebody's got to answer the door when we knock, looking at some peer support stuff. So yeah, that is going to go into staffing. You also have the lights on longer. You also have the team's going to have to respond in some form of vehicle. So yeah, it's going to add into that as well.
And then, you know, some of these individuals may have a primary provider or a psychiatrist already caring for their mental health. But in the case that they don't, is Rosecrans going to assume to be the primary care for psychiatry, or does Carl is one of the sources maybe having Carl be one of the providers for psychiatry? Are you guys looking into that, or what's your plan for establishing with a psychiatrist for these individuals?
Joey?
Yeah, the plan would be to follow. So after the disposition, after all that's done, then we have a follow-up plan. And if that included like psychiatry, therapy, whatever it could be, we would link and assist with all that. Rosecrans currently doesn't have psychiatry in Champaign, but we work with Promise. So that could be a linkage over to Promise. There has been talks with Carl about they're open to having conversations about doctor care as well. All we're hoping to finalize here quickly.
So one of my follow-up questions is with psychiatry, even if you have good insurance, the wait time is already long in this area. I mean, all across the nation, regardless. What are your plans for these individuals who likely may not have any insurance, and making sure that they get the immediate care that they need from a psychiatric standpoint?
There are providers around that would work around the issue of the insurance with the response time, but with the wait time for the appointment, that would be a problem. So I think that would be best followed up with maybe Carl and Promise, and I can get back to you on an answer how we would handle that.
Thanks, I appreciate it. Appreciate that, because I know as a primary care provider, it's already really difficult for us to get our patients, even ones who have suicidal ideation, to get them in a timely manner, just because there's not enough resources. So usually we have to collaborate with the psychiatrist if we have concerns, or call them so that they get them in. But you know, it's something that we want to make sure. I think if we do implement this, when we implement this project, that we have a good plan in place where everyone's on board for getting these people in, so that this is as successful as it can be. So
I would agree 1,000%. I don't know how many times we've seen the lack of psychiatry has then caused the hospitalization that we could have prevented if we had quicker access to care. I would agree.
One of my other questions, sorry, I have a lot of questions, but do you guys have markers that you're going to follow to see the success of this project, such as like tracking the cost savings at Carl's ER or OSF's emergency room, deaths like by suicidal or suicide in the county, prison arrests, healthcare outcomes in individuals that are maybe frequent, frequent the ER or have to, have law enforcement involvement because of mental health issues. Are you guys planning on following some kind of markers to see if the program is successful in certain ways?
So the short answer is yes. The longer answer is, will that start on day one? I don't know. So one of the things that, one of the lessons I've learned through this project is I'm a big believer that excellence is the key to everything. But sometimes you got to start at good to get to excellent. And so if we wait till we got every possible single answer before we get moving, we're never going to get moving. And so those are things that I agree are important to understand, especially when you're talking the dollars and the size we're talking. But we need to sooner rather than later get the doors open. And so we need to get some operational things in place, get the doors open, because keeping those stats requires somebody to keep the stats and somebody to collect them and then to analyze them. And so we need to get the doors open, and we'll figure out who can count the beans as we go.
I appreciate your answers. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. Thank you for the questions. Just one quick question. Is the University of Illinois in any way going to be a part of this also? Yeah, go ahead. Because, I mean, I think they're part of our community, and we've got to. And if we're looking for evaluators, that's where they are.
So what I don't get into when I do this presentation, and let me get into a little bit now, is how we got here. And so we've had this concept brewing for like I said, since about 2012, late 12, early 13. And over the years, it's taken different iterations. And at one point, there was a group of individuals who tried to push this forward, and they got the U of I in the room, and they got OSF, and they got Carl, and they got this provider. They had, quite literally, at one point, I was in a room with about 200 people. And it just got so big and so many questions and so many thoughts and so many different directions it could go that it kind of just died out. And so when I started pushing this forward again 12, 18 months ago, I don't really know when I started it again, but when I started pushing this forward again, I really just went to a few of the people I knew were ready to move it. And as we get it moving, I think you're right. U of I needs to and should come on board and start working with it. So right now the goal is let's get the door open. Let's get the operations at least at a baseline, and then be able to identify what we want U of I to do and what they can do for us, what we want OSF to do and what they can do for us, and push it forward from there. So yes, U of I will, I would hope, and should eventually be a player, but right now has not been approached to participate.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. Julian, and then Tom.
Just a couple of questions to follow up with John. And I wanted to ask Joey, when you're thinking about the need for psychiatry, and of course we all know that that's a scarce commodity in this town, are you considering, or I'm going to guess you must be considering, that psychiatry can be used as in the form of a consultant to people who are more easily funded because they earn less money, but they could be very good as case managers or people who do the direct on the ground work. Whereas typically, I don't mean to insult psychiatrists, but typically what they're good for is providing medicine. So people do often need antipsychotic medications and so on. And I guess my question is, are there now, and can there be in this model, consultant psychiatrists who are on call as a part of their job to provide consultation to the people who are doing the hard work of on the ground case management?
Yes. That has been talked about a few times, about how do we get a psychiatrist to consult with. I think some of the barriers with that, Julian, though, is the consultation is still good for the disposition, but then what do we do about the actual script and the follow-up? In my time, the psychiatrist, even if they're willing to help within the crisis, working at a couple-day script, but then a follow-up that we have to make. You're like talking about my dreams now, Joe. That would love that. That would be
I understand. I was just bringing it up because it seems obvious to me that an important part of making this work with psychiatry is to develop some kind of working relationship that doesn't rely totally on a psychiatrist in that model of, oh, well, we now have sent him to a psychiatrist, so it's their patient, but where the psychiatry is used when necessary in consultation with other people who are doing the hard work of day-to-day assisting people. So yeah. Anyway, I'm glad that you're at least thinking about it, and I'm hoping that the providers that, or the institutions in the community that have or can get psychiatrists are willing to entertain such a relationship.
And that is one of my goals too, is how do I build trust with the psychiatrist in the community? So I think if they know that Rosecrans will ensure follow-up and getting patients to follow-up appointments, and that's a trusting relationship, that's a better chance of that working on long term.
Thank you. I appreciate your answer. And also I want to thank Joel, because he referred back to when this started. This has made amazing progress, and I really appreciate the persistent, consistent effort to bring people into it and listen to them and make modifications. And it's actually starting to feel like, gee, this is might actually be possible. So thank you.
Thank you, Julian. And just real quick on the psychiatrist thing, just to back up with what Joey said, a lot of the questions that are being asked have been asked. We meet every Thursday as a team to start planning the operations of this. And those are questions that are continually asked. And I don't want to speak, as I say this on the public recorded line, I'm not speaking for Carl, but I can say Carl has, as we've talked about psychiatry, has said, you know, what is needed and what can they do? So I don't know that's where they will play in, but they've not shunned away from that question.
It's, you know, Tom?
Lieutenant Sanders, I was just interested in the history of this, because it seems to me, in my memory at least, that this project comes about because of the concern that citizens have had about police behavior and those, and especially when we had a young man in our community who was shot and killed, and then we also had several local guys who were trying to at least document police behavior. And so some of this has to do with how are we going to be able to deliver a police service to our citizens that doesn't endanger them. And it's also now, it's in the, and what's happening in the nation right now, where police are under a spotlight about doing something different. So some of this seems to me like, how are we going to make life better for the people that we serve? And as you were talking about its history, and I know it's taken a long time, and I don't think it should take any other, should be done in any quicker, because we can make a lot of mistakes by developing policy on the spur of the moment. But I guess what I don't want to see left out in the cold are the people who are being served, and are the idea of dignity and respect, is that really being communicated? Are we reducing the number of people who are going to are being incarcerated at the local level and at the prison level? And so I don't want that to be lost in the details of how we're doing this program.
Hey, Tom, I appreciate that, and the from the law enforcement perspective. From just a pragmatic way of how this, as I started bringing this through, you know, for me personally, there's more than just law enforcement in this. There's a human side. But if you look at, if you separate that out, it comes down to how does, you know, Urbana was, we had one individual we went to 50 times in a 5-month period. So how do we then reduce that need for us to have that many contacts with somebody? at one point I remember we had somebody where I read 5 days in a row, I read a report where you arrested somebody for criminal trespass at one of our public establishments. And I asked the officers, what do you think we're going to do on day six if we don't change what we're doing? And so that has been part of this conversation on the law enforcement side is just bringing in resources won't change a lot. We've got to change how we view things, why we're doing things. And so both at the local level and the state level, there's a focus, if you will, if not a refocus on recognizing how we respond to individuals who are in crisis. Within the last 4 years, maybe five, the state passed a law that now every 3 years, police officers have to go through 8 hours of training on how to respond to somebody in a mental health crisis. And that, you know, from a citizen's standpoint, might go, wow, only 3 years. Well, the rule before that was zero. So, you know, it's becoming that step. I can tell you at the city of Urbana, we are extremely focused on our response to individuals in crisis. So we don't want to use this just as a law enforcement tool, but as a way for law enforcement to support the consumers. As we've gone through this, Joey can tell you, anybody else that's been around me can tell you, is I've focused on the consumer, on how the consumers receive through this, more so than, you know, it makes it hard. It's easier, and I'll pick on Joey because he's on here. It's much easier for Joey to put together a crisis team if we don't put a time limit on it. But I'm putting a time limit on it because we need that's what's best for the consumer, not what's best for law enforcement. So I really recognize your concern, and I hope I'm helping alleviate some of that concern.
Thank you, Joey and Joel. I think, do we have any other questions or comments? But I really appreciate it. I think it's something that the community has needed forever, not just our community, as a nation, we need more of this. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it goes into the training of police officers and also healthcare practitioners also. But thank you very much. If there are no other questions, we'll go to the next item on the list, on the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you. So we're looking at funding priorities, which is the next item on the agenda. And I think Lynn put together a very good, at least from my point of view, in a way.
Take chances here. Take my mask.
Okay.
There are lots.
So, Lynn, tell us about it. If you can break it down for us.
Gosh, I don't. I felt like it was a miracle that I could get it to whatever it is, 13 or 16 pages. It was this. I must admit, this year it was pretty difficult to write this because I don't know. I really don't even understand what's going on around us. You know, There's so much information. There's information I just read last night that I wished I'd had to include in here. And that's related to the most recent mortality rates with COVID. So, you know, but yeah, got to stop somewhere. And so That said, this is actually a first draft. It has to be chiseled by comments from you all and input from agency providers and others and like other stakeholders who will receive it. Usually we let you see it first and then, you know, tomorrow maybe or the next day, send it out to people who may be interested in it and who may have comments. And then it'll come back to you hopefully in November as a finished product with revisions based on that feedback. So I don't know if you want me to dive into any of the issues or stop sharing the screen. Y'all have it, so maybe this is overkill. I did a couple of things differently this year. We usually just have a section called the operating environment. given that I don't really understand the operating environment, which is 2020, I decided to talk about the operating environment prior and what might happen after. Just these are based on some indicators at the time. And this is the part which is always evolving. By next month, maybe these things would be inappropriate. But I tried to kind of put a balance of the observations that people have. I mean, you all have been talking about this stuff all year. So I am trying to pull from our previous board discussions as well. And the other thing that's new is this section, assess needs. Here's a quote that came from Elaine Palencia at the, I think this was at our study session just a couple weeks ago. This is an artist statement from one of the people who's been creating art and participating in our Alliance for Inclusion and Respect shows, and sometimes sends me really interesting messages like this one. This one he says is for the public to see, so I liked it. The new section is assess needs. And that is because, you know, we do a formal assessment every 3 years, so we'll do one next year. But I thought that it was important to refer to the more recent one and also to give you some highlights from what will be coming. The 2021 needs assessment is already partly done because part of it is going to come from the iPlan. They have done that and they have given some preliminary results. It's the whole thing isn't ready, but maybe in a month. And then at the suggestion of, here's something. Dr. Moore suggested that I listen to the City of Champaign listening sessions, which were helpfully recorded and posted. You can find them on the City of Champaign website. They were talking about policing, but Dr. Moore, you were right. They were talking about mental health more than policing, with really specific ideas, and people shared some experiences. It was a compelling set of discussions. So, and I think we are on the right track. Some of the things that people are looking for are things you're looking for too. And then, you know, just because we asked the agencies for extra information this year a couple times and they obliged, I thought it was fair to refer to that in this, you know, community needs section. And then also for developmental disabilities needs, we actually get a report every year that gives us a pretty nice update on what the actual people who are eligible for services are looking for. And from 1 year to the next, they're pretty steadily looking for things like fun things to do in the community with friends and family. So that's kind of neat, but it's also a little bittersweet given the times we're living in. So otherwise, you know, some of the familiar priorities are slightly reworked, like crisis response really was the behavioral health to reduce incarceration. It's really not very different, but innovative practices is not very different. I did rework with some of the information that we have from this year, but there is always more that could be done. So I thought I would just stop and share it with you. I don't think there's, you know, when you get into the overarching, I did expand a little bit here in the cultural competence section and talked more specifically about racism in the work, because we're getting a lot of information now about really specific ways that racial trauma and racial disparities are harmful in our community. So I added a lot of material to that section. Anyway, and then the rest is usual stuff.
Thank you for putting it together. Do we have any comments or questions for Lynn? Elaine? Elaine, your mic's...
Yep, sorry.
Thank you.
Just one comment.
about what Lynn just said about including more about racism. I don't know if everybody reads the newspaper anymore like we used to, but the News Gazette is doing a surprisingly good job of featuring short essays by people from the Black community regularly, and what they have gone through in this community and in other communities in terms of being stigmatized and threatened and whatnot. And it's a wonderful public service that they're doing, and it's in helping to inform the way I look at our work. So if you don't read the News Gazette, I would, if you've given up on it for some reason, I would encourage you to look at these essays, because they're quite powerful.
Tom?
That's interesting, Elaine, because they've certainly done a good job on the other end of it before they've changed it.
Before they saw the light.
Yes, but it seems there's kind of a new day now there.
Yeah.
In this regard.
What I wanted to say to our director is, I think I've always known this, but this presentation that you presented to us brought it clear to me with two things about what do we do as a Champaign County Mental Health Board. One is, and that is, our work doesn't seem to be just related to treating or making available mental health services. The COVID-19 and the racism issue, those are both situations that create mental health concerns. And as we go through making our awards to people, we try to deal with the fallout of both of those two things, we may find ourselves doing less with mental health than with some of these situations that relate to mental health. So that if we're talking about housing, the lack of housing leads to mental health problems. So like, I don't think other than the Sills, we're gonna go out and buy a whole village and say everyone who needs a house will have a place. But I do find us finding ourselves in a situation of doing more of those kind of what I would consider to be indirect services that have an impact on behavioral health. And it's just an observation, it's just an observation. And maybe that's a direction that we just need to be mindful of as we go through this next round of awards. But I want to thank you for putting those in there and putting them in there in the fashion that clarified it for me even more than what I would generally think of. Oh my goodness, we have a whole bunch of incidents that relate to the kind of work that we're supposed to do. And can we do our work without attending to those incidents itself?
Yeah, mental health is health. I mean, it's our health. One of the things that COVID has shown us is that our health in general is affected. So mental health is health. Yes, we have still put the mental behind it. But in order for us to become a healthy nation, we have to look at all facets of it, from diet to housing to education. They all affect the health of a country and our community. So starting with our community, hopefully we as a mental health board will put things in place that will affect the health and the well-being of all within this community. Any comments or questions for Lynn on about this? Okay.
I try to bring you a final draft as early as November 18. That's something else we can talk about is the schedule, but in the next few weeks, if you have ideas or observations that you'd like to share with me individually, we can use them.
Yes, thank you, Lynn. Thank you. So the next item on the agenda is a sale transfer resolution, and I have been encouraged to read it to you. Okay. So are you ready? Resolution to transfer real estate from Champaign County Mental Health Board to Champaign County Board for Care and Treatment of Persons with Developmental Disability. Whereas the Champaign County Mental Health Board here in MHB acquired the below listed parcels of real estate in 2015 with the intent to operate community integrated living arrangement homes, CILAs. And whereas the MHB entered into agreements with the Champaign County Board for the Care and Treatment of Persons with Developmental Disabilities, hereinafter DDB, to essentially act as long-term equal partners in the operation of these CILA homes. And whereas the MHB has entered into lease agreements with individual advocacy groups, with individual advocacy group incorporated to lease and operate these homes. And whereas the MHB has entered into property management agreements with Joe Ward Homes concerning these homes. And whereas on September 23rd, 2020, both the MHB and the DDB have passed motions to transfer the legal title of these homes from the MHB to the DDB. And whereas it is in the best interest of both entities and to the clients residing in the CILA homes to transfer both practical ownership and management and legal ownership to the DDB. And whereas this resolution is presented to the MHB on the 21st day of October 2020 upon motion of, who's moving the motion? Am I moving the motion? Please help me.
I think
so.
Okay. And who's second?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. And after discussion, a roll call vote will result. So let's talk. Any questions about this that we're moving into? It looks like, I mean, I'll just take John's shaking his head saying he's good with it. Everybody's good with it.
I have a question about parliamentary process. I'm so sorry, I don't know this. So after the roll call, then does Joe also read this?
That looks really bad to read.
There's a lot more to the resolution after the, you know what? Yeah, I guess that's right. You just take a break and then you keep reading. Isn't this fun?
Okay. Kyle, is that what we do? Because you're the parliamentarian with this stuff here.
The best secret to parliamentary procedure is that the chair makes up everything.
Oh, okay. So I will not read the rest. So are we ready to vote on this?
I'm ready to vote on this. I think we discussed it already at length in previous meetings, so I think we're all comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so am I.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Kathleen Worth Couch?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Joe Omosagye.
Yes. So be it. And then I'll sign, Kyle and I will sign at a later date. Does that work?
Yeah, we'll figure out how to get you both. And maybe the best is the recorder's office where there's a notary and that's the desk.
Oh, yes.
There are some other documents for the two of you to sign in front of a notary. One is called the P-Tax. I don't know what that is. But
I'm not even going to do my eighth grade humor.
Dan Walsh is the attorney for the Mental Health Board in this work, and he has prepared all the documents for us. So we'll just find a time that the two of you can meet there, and I'll bring the documents. Thank you.
Sounds good. So Kyle, we'll touch base, and we'll see what happens, okay? Okay, so going back. So early childhood, watch me grow.
I'm sorry, the context for this is that a former board member from the DD board is Dr. Gingold, Bill Gingold, and he's been working on this for years and years and years. It comes from extensive research, and right now the website, I think, is called watchmegrowprogram.com. It's free. It's kind of an interesting service. He said that since the pandemic, the traffic to this has grown immensely. What they do is determine the child's developmental stage. It's like maybe a period of 6 weeks, like wherever they are, chronologically, mm-hmm. Not important. Developmental age is what they consider. And this program will send parents a number of developmentally appropriate activities to work on with their children. That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
We wanted to share the information about it, and especially to share it with early childhood providers who might be interested in trying it out and, you know, just or looking at it and seeing if this is the kind of thing the families they work with might benefit from, because it's free. So.
Since we fund some Head Start stuff, so definitely something to let them know about. Any questions or comments about this? If not, we'll move to the next item on the agenda. Which would be agency information. Any agency information that we have from anyone? Mm-hmm.
We have a few agency folks on the call tonight.
Yeah, we do. But they must not have anything to add to the conversation.
I'm glad they're here, though.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm not going to call them out by name. That would not be good then. So, if not, then we'll go to the next item, which is old business. The contract amendment report on page 38. So Mark, do you have anything you want to add to this? So it's pretty self-explanatory, but.
No, I don't. It's like you say, pretty self-explanatory. There's been three amendments that were issued, and the report's just intended to inform the board Some of this obviously would have been discussed between the leadership, being you, Joe, and Lynn, as part of the process. But it's intended to just keep the board informed as far as what action was taken.
Okay.
And we've tried to keep things moving forward in terms of access to funds and so forth. That's essentially what is the case with Muhammad Area Youth Club, and to make funds available to Promise Healthcare once they get their audit in. So, and then the Don Moyer amendment was just a technical change in their mailing address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then lots have been this time, who could have predicted a year like this? So things are changing quite rapidly and unexpectedly. Thank you, Mark. So schedules and locations. So let's talk about our meeting schedules and fun stuff.
So there's a chance of a joint study session with the DD board, and the topic would be cultural and linguistic competence training. So that's really cool. We've never done that before. And I think we come together every year and just never do it. So in order to do that, we have to get the DD board too. So I'm interested in learning from you all if you think there would be a quorum on both November 18th and December 16th. So you have a study session next week. I sent the board packets out today. So you should be getting those in the next, hopefully next few days. But so then after that, the next meeting would be November 18. And we maybe bring you all of the rest of the business for wrapping up the year. And then there's another meeting tentatively scheduled for December 16. So I'm just interested if you all are available for both of those. And I did get responses from a few people about their plans for the winter.
My plan is I have no plans.
Oh, mine too.
I mean, during the work week, I'm always free, so.
So that's three.
Well, it's something I can keep working on after this.
Yeah, week. Well, definitely.
We'll just keep it, that's the big stuff, right?
And I like the idea to have a joint, at least one joint meeting a year might be a good thing to keep in mind, because I think we work on a lot of same issues, but from different points of view. So, you know, it's something that I think we ought to take a look at more at, and how we can incorporate some of our conversations that we have about it, about a lot of the different issues that we work together in conjunction. So, any other questions about any of the dates or on them? So, that we're looking at 2021. Hopefully, it's a good year. In the year 2021, must be a good year. So, any other questions, comments?
I like the idea of ending this meeting with song, but we're not. We're not quite.
And you'll be leading us in song? Okay. So, see if there are no questions. Let's see, Eddie, any information from DDB?
They met this morning and had roughly similar agenda. They had a couple of presentations too. They didn't have to do a resolution. Okay. Oh, you do, because it's your house's giveaway. But, you know, we did talk a little bit about the schedule. They actually had quite a long meeting, how few decisions they had to make, and that's kind of happened here, which is nice. Good to have discussion and not so much pressure for decisions.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So let's move to approve minutes.
I move to approve the minutes for whatever date they are.
That helps. Need a second?
I'll second.
Thanks, John.
Is it okay to do it this way where it's, this came up last month and I didn't know how to do it. To move to approve the minutes of both meetings at once?
Yeah.
In here? Okay. Was that John who seconded?
Yeah, that was John.
Okay. Well, that's the rule.
Okay. Any discussion in regards to this? If no discussion, we'll take a vote.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Kathleen Worth Couch?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Elaine Palencia?
Yes.
Joe Omosagye?
Yes. Any staff reports?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wonder if Chandra, is she here? Is Chandra here?
I am here.
Yes, you are. Okay, sorry, I couldn't find you. I'm wondering if you could just say a few words, don't go into great detail, but I was wondering if you could say something about the Grand Challenge and what exactly that amounts to in terms of anything that we can or should pay attention to.
Sure, so it is an initiative that is a part of the 10 challenges initiatives where they were, where they have added actually eradicating racism. And this is the Grand Challenges Initiative through the Social Work, National Association of Social Workers. And so this was presented at the NACBE conference. I think that's the acronym for it. No, go ahead.
The person who wrote this Grand Challenge, so this it takes them up to 12 grand challenges. The man who wrote the Grand Challenge to Eradicate Racism will be speaking at the next NACBID conference, so everybody can come to it.
Okay.
Including your students. And we confirmed today that that's all right.
Okay. And so what the students are doing is presenting, they're doing their final presentation on just steps that they could take as social workers, people in the community that can begin looking at how you eradicate racism.
So I was going to suggest, but maybe it's not necessary, but I think it might be useful for the mental health board to actually invite some sort of presentation of what their suggestions are, with an eye for us toward taking into account how we might think about facilitating that in this community.
December. In December, they're actually doing a presentation, their final presentation. And so members of the board are actually able to attend that as well. And then I'll also have a recording for it as well.
Especially since we're looking at making a statement about racism being a mental health concern and issue. So it is something that's definitely part of a challenge that we're facing.
Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking toward, is it if there isn't some way we could be more concrete with respect to our responsibilities in line with that challenge. Is there some way we can kind of bring these two things together in a practical way, as opposed to a, I'm getting tired of the general enthusiasms of various organizations about how they hate racism, and then everybody just goes on and does what they always do, even though they say they hate race. So, you know, I'm trying to skip over that part
and, sure.
and see and if we can get to something real concrete that's pertinent to our own local issues and the programs and organizations that we deal with. And maybe this isn't the best vehicle for it, but you understand what I'm asking about.
Well, I do understand what you're asking about. And in my staff report, I had done a couple of articles just even on some concrete ways that funders are actually starting to look at how they can address racism. And so after you get that information and we receive the presentation, maybe we can look back at that and actually have a conversation on what can local funders actually do to begin addressing it, and what does it look like concretely?
Thank you. But I tried to connect to one of those links about the funders and it didn't work. And eventually I got a message saying it wasn't available. So maybe that was just my bad technology. I'm not sure, but.
And what I can do is send the article. I can send the article directly to you if so that it can go from
Thank
there.
You.
But the Annie Casey Foundation did a really good job of giving like some very concrete steps. And so I can make sure that that direct document is sent out to the
Thank
board.
You.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, anything else with staff reports or questions or comments? If not, let's go to board-to-board reports. I know it's kind of difficult to do that right now. Was that Elaine?
Yes. I just wanted to say that I attended the Community Coalition via Zoom. Lynn was there. I don't know if others of you were there. But this idea of including social workers in police support does seem to be an idea whose time has come. The U of I police chief, the new police chief, mentioned that they had hired a social worker. And somebody else, I've forgotten which other police force, maybe Lynn would remember. But anyway, the conversation is shifting in that direction, you could tell in the Community Coalition meeting, and I was glad to see that.
It was the Sheriff's Department.
Oh, yes, yes. Thank you, Pat.
Cool. I mean, when he was running for office, I know I had a conversation with him about that several years ago now. And yeah, cool.
They were adding a position.
Good. Thanks, Pat. Any other?
Also at the coalition meeting, I will reference that some juvenile justice data was brought forward during that meeting. And Sam Smith helped bring a group together. And just so from the Family Stronger Together program, I wanted to add just that from the coalition, we were able to bring the Juvenile Justice Council concept to forward a little bit. And Tracy, Mary, Catherine, Sam, and I are meeting tomorrow morning to begin that dialogue. And Sam brought a panel in that talked about what a juvenile justice council can do, what it's supposed to do, what you don't have to do anymore, and some information that there are some steps. But at that coalition meeting, Tracy brought in and Sam brought in some really challenging data for us to look at and realize. And that's one of the core dynamics of having a juvenile justice council, is use data to inform and to challenge ourselves to make changes. So since the comment about the coalition, that was good to hear.
Yeah, those meetings are usually conflictful with all the meetings that I have. I've not been able to attend the juvenile justice meetings yet. Thank you, Pat. Well, you can see there. Any other comments about budget board? So if not, you can look at the expenditure list. So, since it's money, any questions on the expenditures?
Joe, Tom started to make the motion.
Okay. Who's going to second?
Okay, I'll second it. I'm always ready to spend money.
Thanks, Joanne.
I guess it's already spent anyway.
It is. It's already spent. Any discussion or comments? Okay, we can take a vote.
Julian Rappaport?
Yes.
Jane Sprandel?
Yes.
Kathleen Worth Couch?
Yes.
John Paul Joachim?
Yes.
Tom Moore?
Yes.
Elaine Quincia?
Yes.
Kyle Patterson?
Yes.
Joe Omosagie?
Yes. Agencies and the news.
So this is just for fun, because.
Yeah, I liked it.
Why not? Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question about it?
Go ahead.
Please. Does this booklet, including these announcements, become archival? Yes?
Yes.
Then I suggest if you take a look at page 76 in the lower right-hand corner, there's something that probably doesn't belong there. I suggest we take it out, not the whole page, but produce that page without what's in the lower right-hand corner. If you look, you'll see perhaps why I'm suggesting that.
76.
Page 76.
Okay, I see it.
You know what? I can't because it. This is what came up from the News Gazette website, and I couldn't remove that. I mean, it has an X right there, so I see what you're talking about.
I just think that's inappropriate to have in this anything that certainly what becomes archival.
Right. I don't know, Stephanie. Is it? Can I change a board packet once it's been posted? I mean, if I can get back to the News Gazette article and remove all of the extraneous stuff.
I mean, you could just put like a black box over it, or you could put like a white box over it, or maybe just like a gray box.
Any other color, Cal? Other color, the grocery don't work.
You know someone's going to say that we took a position on this issue.
Someone could possibly say that.
But you know,
there's always that possibility.
The entire recording of the meeting is also available to them. So what you've just done is provided an excellent disclaimer. And that is in accordance with the County Code of Ethics, by the way, where you can't, as a body, take a position on something like that. So
exactly.
We are following the law.
I'm glad we have people like you here, because I skip it very easily. But yes, it's good to see. Good to see. Beyond that, any other questions or comments about it?
make a motion to adjourn.
Oh, who with that? Who seconds?
It was Tom, but you also have board announcements.
Okay.
Do you want to skip board
announcements? Yeah, board announcements. Yeah. Any board announcements? Yeah, I don't think they had board announcements.
Maybe that was Tom's announcement.
Yeah. Okay, that was the announcement. And anybody, I think it's been seconded by Elaine. So, meeting adjourned. Have a wonderful rest of the week.
Thank you, Lynn.
See you next week, everybody.
Thank you, thank you. Have a good week. See you next week for the study session. Bye-bye.